Lunch with Pippa Hudson
on Cape Talk.
Join the conversation.
What we're going to do next is take a look at the books and at the fantasy genre in general. So stepping away from the television series, more broadly, I thought I wanted to look at the genre of fantasy fiction and how these books and these TV shows have really helped to birth a whole new generation of fantasy fans. For those who are not familiar with the source material, George R.R. Martin started working on the series in 1991, and it took him 5 years to finish the first book, A Game of Thrones, and get it to print. There have been another 4 volumes since then. Some publishers have broken them up into, as The Lord of the Rings did, broken up into sort of mini books within a volume, but technically 4 volumes, so 5 in total published so far. He is theoretically still busy with number 6. He's been promising it to us for years, keeps getting sidetracked to write other things and write television series and more. He's promised up there will be a 7th volume to wrap up the story and that will be the end of the series. But will he live long enough to finish the work? It's a big question that fans of the books like myself are asking with increasing anxiety. I found a clip of him talking to a broadcaster in Chicago called WTTW about how the success of the television series impacted his journey as an author. Let's take a listen.
It changed my life in mostly good ways, although, you know, looking back, I wish I'd stayed ahead of the books. My biggest issue there was when they began that series, I had 4 books already in print, and the 5th one came out just as the series was starting in 2011. I had a 5-book head start, and these are gigantic books, as you know, if you've seen them. I never thought they would catch up with me, but they did. They caught up with me and passed me, and you know, that made it a little strange, because now the show was ahead of me, and the show was going in somewhat different directions, so I'm still working on the book, but you'll see my ending when that comes out. It did become a phenomenon. It was the most popular television show in the world for a time. It won more Emmys than any other show in television history, which is, those are both very exciting things, and I'm very pleased to be associated with it. And it also made me famous, which I have mixed feelings about. I think it was Bill Murray who said, if you dream of fame and fortune, try just fortune first. And there is something to say that. Fame is definitely a double-edged sword. But, you know, Westeros, I've been writing stories about Westeros and the people who live there, the Seven Kingdoms, since 1991, since I began that. It's such a huge part of my life at this point, and now I'm developing more shows for HBO. We have a new show, House of the Dragon, that's coming down the pike, filming right now in London and Cornwall over in England, probably beyond next spring, I guess. But then I'm developing other shows for that. So it's transformed my life, you know, for good or for ill. It is where I am. And I do love Westeros. I love telling stories about it. So there's a lot more stories to tell.
That was the author George R.R. Martin talking there about his work on the Game of Thrones book series called A Song of Ice and Fire, and on Fire and Blood, which is the source material for House of the Dragon. Somebody asked me on the WhatsApp whether House of the Dragon is going to be a more family-friendly show than Game of Thrones. Definitely not, from what I've seen in episode 1. It is every bit as violent and as racy as the original one was. So do keep that in mind. It's definitely not intended for a younger viewing audience. Okay, so the books that have already been finished have sold in excess of 90 million copies worldwide, and they've been translated into nearly 50 languages. They've permeated every corner of the globe. But more than that, they have been credited with driving a resurgence of the fantasy genre in general, helped in no small part by the television series, of course. But I got to sit down earlier this week with a specialist in the fantasy genre, Professor Brian Atterbury from Idaho State University in the USA. He is the author of an award-winning nonfiction book called Strategies of Fantasy that takes a deep dive into some of the sort of historical fantasy writers like Tolkien and Lewis and the like, and also the more modern ones. And he's a very interesting guy to talk to about the new canon of authors coming through. He's actually not the biggest Game of Thrones fan, but he had some really interesting insights into the genre and its popularity, which I wanted to share with you. Let's take a listen.
Taking a look at fantasy as a genre, I mean, I know to some degree it's looked down upon as the sort of Coke Light of literature by some academics, but obviously it's a gift to the readers to be able to remove all the rules of society and of physical science and just imagine a world of your own and different ways of being in this world and the sort of endless possibilities that then unlocks the concept of remaking a world without limits. Why do you think it's often looked down upon as the sort of the poor stepchild of literature?
Well, I'm not sure that it is as much as it used to be.
That's
certainly
good.
When I got started in studying it, it was seen as outside of the mainstream, whatever that was.
Yeah.
I suppose there were sort of pecking orders in English departments and certainly creative writing programs. And mm-hmm. that's probably the last holdout, is that there are some sort of snobbish creative writing programs still out there. But the widespread acceptance in the world now pretty much overturned any of those kind of distinctions. There's such popularity and such sort of penetration of every market, every place in the world now, that it's still that it becomes kind of hard to make any claims of superiority for non-fantastic. Mm-hmm. And also, my own background includes a lot of study of traditional materials, myths, legends, fairy tales. That is the kind of norm of storytelling in most places, most times. And something that we would call realism is a kind of newcomer a kind of cuckoo in the nest of of the larger literary field.
And of course, so many of the great, more modern fantasy writers pick up on those original myths and traditions. I mean, I'm thinking back, I did my honours degree on The Lord of the Rings, and I remember the research and the references to all of the Nordic legends that were picked up on and the ancient fairy tales that influenced Tolkien's work, for example. They've helped to gift us some of the most creative and imaginative minds of authors who created not just memorable stories and characters, but whole universes and ethical codes, and in the case of Tolkien, entire languages to go with them. I mean, as a professor who specializes in this genre, do you maybe want to elaborate a little bit on the history of fantasy and some of those roots you've referenced there and sort of, you know, the waves of popularity it has enjoyed?
There's a good term coined by John Clute, who's one of the main sort of thinkers about fantasy and science fiction. Mm-hmm. He calls them taproot texts, meaning these are the stories that are out there to be not in active circulation, but available to be drawn on and reframed and brought into the present. My previous book was all about the reframing of myth and fantasy, and Tolkien is certainly a great example of that. As a scholar of medieval literatures and languages, he was aware of not only Nordic myths, but also Celtic and Finnish and many other sort of cultures that he drew on. I think that not all fantasy writers have that direct access that Tolkien seems to have had, sometimes they get these things secondhand and their versions of them become kind of, I don't know, there's a certain sort of degrading when you copy a copy, like on a Xerox machine. And that has been a problem, but not so much, I think, in more contemporary work where people have gone outside of the sources that Tolkien used and found inspiration or sometimes I guess they kind of exploit other cultural traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the for me, one of the most exciting things within fantasy in the last 10 or 20 years is that people from other cultures are starting to look at their own materials and reframe them as contemporary stories of the fantastic, so that we're getting Australian indigenous writers and a lot of African fantasy is coming mm-hmm. out, South Asian, Native American, and so on. So it's no longer a matter of let's go around the world and pick and choose the myths that sound sort of cool and make up a story about them, but rather here is my own tradition and I want to find a way to reconnect with it in the modern world. Mm.
Now, into this world of enthusiasm for the genre steps George R. R. Martin, a series of books so heavy you need a wrist guard to hold them up, a lot of patience to wait between the volumes as they come out. Before we talk about the impact of the television adaptation, how was A Song of Ice and Fire in its initial book series? How influential was it?
My sense when they first appeared was, oh yeah, here's another pretty cool one, take a look at it, but not here is something really genre changing.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin was already pretty well established as both a fiction and a TV writer, as I recall.
Yeah.
I'm speaking as somebody who's not really excited about the Game of Game of Thrones, the Song of Ice and Fire. Because I think there are other works of fantasy that do more for me. I suppose that's my own sort of lack of interest in the political struggles of
right.
factions and the kind of violence in it. Which is not to say that politics isn't there in fantasy, because I think that there is something powerfully political about saying the world doesn't have to be the way it is. It could be other than what it is. I don't see that happening so much in Martin's work or the TV productions of it. What we get there is a kind of alternative Middle Ages. He was rewriting in some ways the War of the Roses and some of the dynastic struggles in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen some very compelling analyses of his books, and I am willing to believe that there is something pretty powerful, but it's not my favorite.
Fair enough. And obviously everybody has their own taste, and that's the beauty of the world we live in. What's not to be denied is the impact that these books have had on popular culture, and I have read several pieces suggesting that they've been influential in reigniting an interest in fantasy as a genre, that you might have started with the books of A Song of Ice and Fire or even with the television show Game of Thrones and found that opened a door into a new genre that you found that you enjoyed and got you reading in other directions. Do you think that's a fair assessment? Certainly from the literary perspective, do you think that it's led to a surge of interest in the genre again?
I would guess that is very true. In some ways, it redid what Tolkien's work did, which is to bring a whole generation into the study of past times and places and ways of seeing the world.
The ripples of its influence, I mean, felt Game of Thrones, both the books and the television series, very much aimed at an adults only audience, or should have been, but have been embraced by the young adult audience as well. Do you think the ripples of influence have been felt even into the young adults and younger children's fantasy section as well?
They probably have, but I think the more powerful influence for younger readers, there was the kind of Harry Potter craze.
Yep.
that followed the books and then the movies. My own kids were just exactly the right age to be part of that, and I'm grateful to that series for getting them excited about reading and about fantasy.
Now, as you've mentioned, the elephant in the room in any conversation about George R. R. Martin is the fact that the series is not finished yet. He's getting older. He's busy working on side projects like Fire and Blood and the new season It's Birthed, which starts airing in South Africa on Monday. We're still waiting for him to finish The Winds of Winter, not even a sniff other than a title for what he said would be the final book, The Dream of Spring. The television show goes its merry way plot-wise and has moved away from his books. What's your sense? Do you think the series is ever going to be completed? And B, does it even matter if it is?
I think for Martin, it almost feels like he has done the work he wants to do. And it's a matter now of sort of the way Mozart composed. He said he had the whole piece in his head, and then it was just the tedium of writing it down. So I'm guessing that for George Martin, he has done his work of world building and is not as interested or is just unwilling to kind of bring it to a conclusion. It will happen. And I'm thinking of the work of Robert Jordan and his Wheel of Time series, which had to be completed by Brandon Sanderson.
Right.
So if necessary, that's what will happen again. And I think that they could do better than the TV series has done in finding ways out of the story.
Okay. We can have a whole half-hour discussion on that issue alone, and I probably will in the next half-hour of the show. Brian, in closing, let's just step away from Game of Thrones for a second. I mean, you've made reference during the interview to the excitement of the wave of new authors and the wave of people drawing on new inspiration and new cultural myths and stories and legends to inform their fantasy writing. I'd be remiss in not asking you to name a couple of your own favorites and maybe point our audience in the direction of some new fantasy writers to discover.
One that I am just one volume into, Rebecca Roanhorse, who is a Native American writer, has a book called Black Sun, which is the first of an epic fantasy series. I think that's really fascinating. And she's using a kind of middle America that is Central America and Caribbean setting in which there has been no European invasion. And of course, there's magic and warring tribes and so on. There's a writer named Ambolin Quimelina in Australia who has written a trilogy based in some Aboriginal lore. I think it's really well done. The American writer, but with Nigerian background, Nnedi Okorafor, has a whole bunch of really interesting fantasy / science fiction. She often sort of combines the two in her work and brings in both history and myth from her Nigerian family's background. So that's three just for starts.
I enjoyed the conversation with Professor Brian Atterbury. He is an academic at the Idaho State University in the USA and the author of an award-winning nonfiction work about the fantasy genre called Strategies of Fantasy.